This is Colonel Peter Burdick, take two.
The other part of the noise the elephants were making was breaking the bamboos as with their feet as they walked through it. But it was a noise like a very noisy express train, and I realized it was obviously a large herd of elephant, moving by night, perhaps moving to a stream to drink or something like that. Mercifully, the main part of the herd was moving on a track that ran parallel to the one that we were ambushing, or we would have just had to get up and run for it. As it was, however, which is almost more dangerous, hidden by the noise of the main herd, there were a couple of elephant out on the flank, which suddenly came along the track that we were ambushing. And in fact, they were moving reasonably quietly. The track was reasonably wide there. And the first thing that I knew was that I looked up and I saw some new trees in front of me, only a few yards away, trees which hadn't been there before, because the other trees around us were all bamboo, and the bamboo even up there is only about 3 or 4 inches across. But these were big, thick trees, and then they moved on, and then another 4 trees came past and moved on, but mercifully they went straight through and didn't worry us, and needless to say, we didn't worry them. But that sort of thing could happen very, very, very easily, and we, as a general rule, kept out of their way, and they kept out of our way. Another time, we had a contact, and yes, fine, Charles. Having told the story of the first contact my patrol had in the forest, when we met this Mau Mau gang coming headlong straight towards us, the next contact, and it must have been a couple of months later. No, it doesn't matter. My next contact happened in open ground on the edge of a river, and I should say at this point that it did make life a little bit boring, because contacts did not happen very often. Some platoon commanders and some patrol commanders went right through a whole tour in Kenya, perhaps as much as a year or 18 months, without making a contact at all. It wasn't their fault. It was just hard luck. They might perhaps have been moving a little too fast. They might have been making a bit more noise than they should have done. But very often it was just bad luck. For about 5 or 6 hours, we were pretty tired. We were just starting to think about making our base for the night. It was all these operations we did in the forest were rather a hit and miss business. We had very little in the way of intelligence to go on. We had our animal common sense. We knew the Mau Mau wouldn't be far from water. We knew they wouldn't be far from trails. But we had nothing in the way of hard information. There wasn't anything really in the way of air reconnaissance or anything like that that could help us, and so any information we had was almost entirely our own. And as a platoon commander, I had nothing to do with the setting it up, but the authorities, I think sometimes out of frustration, used to organize other operations for us, really two categories. Firstly, sweeps in the reserve, and secondly, cordon and search operations in the townships. Whether or not they produced very much in the way of good results, I don't know. I doubt it. They were certainly frustrating things to take part in, but they gave us a change of scenery and a change of environment for a day or two when they happened. Sweeps took place in the reserve, in the open country. You couldn't possibly do a sweep in the forest, because you just lose contact with each other in that thick undergrowth and vegetation. But in the reserve, if there was reasonable intelligence that there was a gang, and the gangs had to go into the reserve sometimes to get medical assistance and things like that, we would, great parties of of forces, perhaps two or three companies, or perhaps as much as a brigade, would be lined up, covering an extended line, perhaps an extended line as much as a mile or so or more long, and then with stops on either flank of this extended line, and the extended line would then move in the appointed direction with perhaps 5 yards or so between each man, and you would literally just sweep, just like a brush sweeping up dust. And if there were an imam in front of the sweep, of course, sooner or later, providing you weren't most unlucky, and you dislodged them and obliged them to move along. Now and again they shinned up trees and weren't seen, we believe, but usually I think we kept them moving. And providing there was someone at the other end of the sweep, rather like a pheasant shoot, I suppose, where you put the guns out, and providing they were doing their job, now and again, I believe the sweeps did succeed in catching Mau Mau. I don't think I ever took part in one that was successful, but one did now and again hear of them being so. The other type of operation, which I think appealed to us more, the sweeps were a bit boring, I think appealed to us more, were cordon and search operations. They were fun for platoon commanders, because it usually meant a nice change. You got into lorries, you had a drive down to Nairobi or somewhere like that. You might even get a night out on the tiles before or after the operation. And then in conditions of great secrecy, what happened was that some part of the African townships around Nairobi would be selected, obviously one where they thought there might be a gang or two hiding up, enjoying the flesh pots just as much as we were. And very early in the morning, uncomfortably early, perhaps 3 or 4 o'clock, well before the cock crowed, we would approach on foot, probably having started the approach on lorries from an unexpected direction, miles away, and we would then get out of the lorries so that we too far away to be heard from the township. We would approach on foot in accordance with an elaborate plan. We would put a cordon right round the outside of this township, hopefully as quiet as we could, but that wasn't easy, because the moment you got within 100 yards or two, the dogs would all start barking. And then, having put the cordon out and having got the cordon in place, and fine timing was needed here, because if you put it in too early, it was really dark, and any baddies had a chance of escaping under cover of darkness, so your aim was to try and get the cordon in just as it was getting light, and just when it was light enough to shoot if you had to. And then what happened is that we'd have to wait probably half an hour or an hour until it was completely daylight, and then the police and search parties would go through each hut, searching each hut, particularly up in the rafters, to see if there was a gang hiding there. And then perhaps just as it was getting warm in the day, perhaps 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock, you could finish and the cordon could be dispersed. It was rather a boring business, but it made a change for us. There was an event, I think it must have been getting on towards the first Devon's tour in Kenya in the mid-50s that's worth recounting. Maybe it was getting on towards the end of 1954. I was still in B Company of the 1st Devons, I had been... I wasn't a platoon commander anymore. I'd commanded my platoon for about 15 or 18 months. I'd got a little bit older, and I was then second in command of my company, which suited me very well, because it meant I was a temporary captain, and I got quite a nice little bit of extra pay. And we were out in the Kikuyu Reserve. We had a company base in the Kikuyu Reserve, a couple of miles from the edge of the forest. And this time, we'd moved over from the Aberdare Forest to the edges of Mount Kenya, and our company were operating in Mount Kenya. Having been a platoon commander for 18 months, I found being company second in command was a bit boring. I was responsible for the food and the rations and all the administrative side of life, and I didn't get to see much of my dear old platoon except when they were in base, and I had to be a bit careful there because they had a new platoon commander. Anyway, one day, the whole company was out of camp. It was on an operation up on the edge of the forest. They didn't think there was much chance of getting anything, but they had a little bit of information, and they were all out except for a few soldiers guarding the camp. And I think by this time, perhaps the passage, certainly we seemed to get a bit more information by this time than we did when we first got to Kenya. The only information we got was what we got for ourselves. I think by this time we were working a bit better with the police than we were to start with. I don't think we understood each other very well, except for the old Malayan hands, and they knew the form. I got a message, a call on the radio at lunchtime. I was in the company base, and it was our battalion intelligence officer, and he said that he'd got a very good hot tip from the police that a sweep was going on the Tana River, and that on one flank of the sweep there was a large gang of Mau Mau, and there was a possibility that if someone could get to it within a few hours, it could be trapped on one side of the river. And he spoke to me because our company base was the one nearest this part of the Tana River, and if anybody could do anything about it, it was us. In fact, we were the only people who could do anything about it because everybody else was too far away. I put the radio down, and my heart sank because I was there in the company base. There were about four or five soldiers from one of the platoons. There were about three or four soldiers on guard, and they had to stay on guard because you had to. Security and protection of your camp was important, and you couldn't let your guard down. The company sergeant major was in camp. We had no transport. The water wagon, a lorry with an enormous water tank on it, was out down at the river getting water, and it was unreliable at the best of times. The only remaining Land Rover had gone into Nyeri to get NAFI supplies. And then I looked around behind me, and I saw the three tonner that carried the mobile bath unit had arrived about half an hour before. And I wasn't quite sure what to do. The intelligence officer had told me where this gang was suspected of being. I went to our map cupboard. There wasn't a map, but my company commander had a very elaborate incident map, I'm sorry to say I took it down off the wall and took out the bit of map that I needed. I went over to the bath truck, and there was a very cheerful Royal Army Ordnance Corps driver driving it, and I said, look, I said, how would you like a change today? We're not going to use you for baths when the company come back in, because he was going to be there to give everybody a hot bath when they came in off this patrol. I said, we're not going to use you for that. How about taking us out on an operation? And he said, oh, he said, providing we gave him a direct order to do that, he was bound to do so. And he said privately that it was the opportunity he'd been waiting for a long time. The sergeant major by this time had got together about seven or eight soldiers. I left him in charge. We jumped into this lorry, having unloaded all the showers and pipes and things from this mobile bath unit carefully onto the ground, and off we went with this one solitary map between us. And
how many of you?
About seven or eight, and we just drove off into the bush fast. Then we met problem number one. And we jumped into the lorry. Must have been about seven or eight of us. There was the next chap in charge below me was a very nice fellow called Corporal Gill from the Channel Islands, and I suppose it must have been about half a dozen soldiers. I'd have liked a lot more to deal with the really good hot tip that we'd been given, but that was as many as we could possibly take from the company base. We drove off It was strange country to us, all of us. We drove off towards the edge of the Tana River, where we knew this sweep operation had been going on all day, and we had problems finding our way. The Kenya Survey Department were an excellent organization, and they made excellent maps, but the trails that they marked on the maps were very often confused by the water-carrying ladies who would make their own trails, and as one African village was established, new trails would be made, and it made it very difficult to map read. At any rate, after about 10 or 15 minutes driving, we realized we were getting to the right area, because we heard a lot of warlike noises, a lot of shooting going on a few, or perhaps a mile away, and we could see one or two of the Piper Pacer aircraft that were used by the Kenya Police Reserve to support our operations. On we drove, and as we went, we went past a police post, and I went in there, and there was a pandemonium going on. I managed to get hold of the officer in charge, who I'd met before, and I told him I got this piece of information. He said, yes, we know about this. He said, are you going to try and do something about it? And I said, yes, I certainly am. He said, perhaps we could tie operations up a bit between us. And he said, well, that's a bit difficult, because we're going to go in this direction. He pointed to the map. And I said, well, how about changing slightly, and then you and I will go along level with each other? And he said, well, we can't do that, because half the people on the operation have already had their instructions and have already gone off. So it was evident to me that we just got to be careful and work on our own. About the same time, a couple of, we used to call them Kenya cowboys, these young European settlers came into the police post, and they were very often a menace. They both had, I think it was two of them, they both had rifles. They'd heard this was going on. They wanted to join in the fun and shoot a few mama. And these people were the very worst sort of folk for having anything to do with these operations. And I told them if they wanted to come with us, they could do so. But if they did, they were to do exactly what I said, and I knew what I'd do. I'd be able to slip them in the back of the force somewhere or other and get someone to keep an eye on them. But that they obviously didn't want to do that. They knew that there would be a bit of control. At any rate, they went off, and mercifully we didn't see them again that day. So on I went, having a fair bit of doubt in my mind as to what was happening. The situation, there was a lot of shooting going on, and we parked our truck up. I knew by then that we were about 300 or 400 yards from the River Tana, which is a very big, wide, fast-flowing river, deep and perhaps 100 metres across where we were. And then, to my considerable amazement, I saw a large Mama gang about three or 400 yards away. We could see heads bobbing up and down in the undergrowth in the trees between us and the river. So I spread our small party of soldiers out.
I'm sorry,
Yes. We parked up the truck perhaps a few hundred yards from the Tana River, and got out, and the small number, seven or eight of us, got into an extended line, as it were a continuation of the sweep that we knew was going on, but we didn't know where the rest of the sweep was, and then moved in the direction of the Tana River. I saw to my astonishment a considerable number of African heads and hats bobbing about in the trees, and realized that we had struck gold, and that we were, that we had, almost the first time in my tour in Kenya, got a really good bit of information. So we increased our speed. I suppose we were about 5 yards between each other, and continued on an extended line towards the river, where I realise now we somehow or other, we had got this gang trapped. I thought trapped at any rate. About 200 yards from the edge of the river, one member of the of our patrol found himself suddenly in the nightmarish predicament of confronting a Mau Mau, crouching on the ground, pointing his rifle at him. And we were all relieved that this soldier of ours remembered what they used to call shoot-to-kill exercises in those days, the art of firing at a target quickly. And our soldier, none of us will ever know by what sort of a split second, but our soldier fired first and shot the Mau Mau stone dead. On we went, no time to worry about anything like that. And as we approached this gang and the edge of the river, we then, and I did put in obviously quite careful control now, we started firing at opportunity targets, and I would just stop our extended line for a few seconds. I'd say, fire at that enemy or target or whatever I said at the time. And we shot quite a number that way, four or five, I think, by the time we'd finished. And then almost all of a sudden, it had been like some sort of grotesque fairground booth up to then. All of a sudden, we found ourselves at the edge of the river. And I was a little bit disappointed because I reckoned there was probably a gang of 20 or so people who I thought were trapped between me and the river. And I looked across the river to the other side, and there were a couple of European settlers who I discovered later were farmers and two or three African policemen. And they shouted out to me and they said, "They've gone in the water." And so we had a quick consultation together over the river. And I said to them, "Look, we'll all lie down and throw our grenades in the water. And the moment the grenades go off, you get up. And if you can see any of them, shoot them." And that's what we did. We laid down. There was a river bank about 3 or 4 feet high. So if we laid down, threw grenades in the water and laid down, we were safe. And on the, so were they on the other side of the river. So we did that. We each had a grenade or two in our pouches. And we kept them primed. We threw all our grenades in the water. They made a terrible noise. And the moment they'd gone off, these people on the other side of the river fired. It sounds awfully merciless now, but it was the only way. The people on the other side fired at the remainders in the water. The water was flowing fast, and to this day we've no idea what damage we caused, but I have a feeling we probably got most of them because the water was deep, the current was flowing fast, and the combination of grenades and shooting, I think, must have caused a lot of casualties. And you know, we thought it was a nice, it was a good action for our company, and it was perhaps a reflection at last, perhaps of the provision of reasonable information, and what were good communications. We thought perhaps that some of them might possibly be around still. Some of them probably managed to get away onto both the flanks. And so I then tried to get in communication with other people. And by an enormous stroke of luck, a police Land Rover came past me. And it had in the back what was a rarity in those days, was a very large VHF set with lovely winking lights on the front of it in the back. And I put my arm out, managed to stop it, and by some miraculous opportunity, I managed to get onto our commanding officer, who was at the battalion command post at Athyre, and give him the first report on what had been going on. And I told him I thought there was a chance that some of the gang had broken out to the flanks, and that if it were possible to bring up a follow-up force, there might be a bit of some opportunities to be taken. He said he'd do that, but by now it was about an hour before it got dark. He said what he'd do would be, he would come and see us, and then he would stand a company by, ready to do an operation at first light. So what happened was, a couple of hours later, a rather testy commanding officer arrived out of the dark, having lost his way, just as I did, a few times. And we went through on the map what he'd doing. I'd put out ambushes on what I thought were the most likely trails, but I think I only managed to put out about three. We were very short men. And he then mounted an operation for the following morning above the rising points of three tributaries of the river that flowed down into the Tana. He also brought us, as a young officer, I'd gone off into the bush without thinking too much about administration, and he also brought some water and some rations that I'd forgotten to take with me to see us through the night. And the following morning, the ambush parties rose rather cold and stiff, not having seen or heard anything. This company of ours arrived, and they did a sweep operation through the scrub, but the birds had flown by then. But it was an interesting little operation, and we thought it was the first time anyone had gone to war in a mobile laundry unit. These say a word or two about our soldiers. Most of them were West Country men. I think probably most of them were from Devon. We found most of our men in the Devonshire Regiment were from the West Country. In fact, I think most of them were from the county themselves. We found them, and I think perhaps they've always been marvellous men for the sort of work we were doing in Kenya. Very kindly, courteous people, very, very good ambassadors for Britain, very steady soldiers, very good at this sort of operation, which demanded patience and sense. I think perhaps the sort of North Country or perhaps the sort of North Country or the Scottish soldier is different. Perhaps he's better in the sort of in fierce attack, in belligerent operations. I think our soldiers are they anger less easily. They're perhaps they're a little bit steadier. This, of course, was the time of national service. I think we were lucky. A soldier would come to us for his 2 years national service. He'd get about 12 weeks training at the depot in Exeter before he joined the battalion. Most of them were thoroughly nice, likeable people. After a few months, they made extremely good soldiers. Of course, they hadn't got the experience that we get now from today's long-serving soldiers. But they did amazingly well.
Did you have? Can you remember?
I'm drying up. So thank you.
Sorry, you don't want to comment.
Yes, a final comment. I think on the tour of the Devonshire Regiment in Kenya. I think most of us found it a most adventurous, happy experience. It was, I think, many would argue, it was soldiering at its best. We had good soldiers. We had a very worthwhile, at least at the time, we thought, and I still do, we thought it was a very worthwhile job we were doing. We were in the most beautiful, interesting country with nice people. We were up in the mountains. We weren't in tropical heat. We were under a pleasant sun most of the time. Sometimes it could be very wet, and sometimes it could be very cold and uncomfortable. But all in all, I think we all look back in it with great happiness as a time of great fun. And we mustn't pretend otherwise. We were not up against a dangerous, determined, resolute enemy, and we were not in any very great danger. And one mustn't have any illusions about that. Thank you, Charles. Thank you.